Welcome to episode 16 of Practical Defense, Home Security, Part 6. Welcome back to another episode of Practical Defense. I'm your host, Alex Addix. With this week's segment, we'll finish up our series on home security. You know, last time we talked about options for securing the inside of your home. We also took a different look at the garage as a potential soft target in your perimeter. Then, we also went over some protocols for answering your front door when someone comes knocking. In this episode, we're going to talk about inviting people into your home, inside lights, taking an inventory of your things, and a little bit about blinds and window coverings, and then we'll close up with some mail. We've got a long episode this time, so let's get down to business. You know, inviting strangers into your home is always risky. And the key word here is stranger. You know, strangers are delivery people, salesmen, repairmen, your gardener, or even charities. I know it's an odd thing, but people often don't look at service or repair people as being strangers or being a threat. But, you know, take a moment to think about what you know about this person that you've invited to your home. They've come to your home during the day when no one's around. And in reality, you know nothing about them. You might not even know what company they actually work for. Well, you might say, hey, you know, that's why I only buy from Acme Mega Corporation. I feel safe with them. They wouldn't hire a criminal. I'm certain they do intensive background checks on all of their employees. Sure, you might purchase the stove from, or refrigerator, or appliance, whatever it is, from, you know, Acme Mega Corporation, but that doesn't mean that they are the ones doing the delivery and installation. You know, often delivery and installations are subcontracted to a local company rather than having the Megacorp do it personally and have a, you know, nationwide staff of installers for every city in every part of the world. Plus, you know, a large corporation doesn't necessarily mean that they're any safer. Do you know for a fact that they conduct intensive background checks on all their delivery and service employees? And if they do, fantastic. But, you know, that employee may have had a spotless record at the time of the investigation or the background check, but since then, they might have become addicted to drugs. They might have fallen in with the wrong crowd. They might have accrued massive amounts of debt or even become indebted to the wrong people. The point is, you have no idea, and the employer probably doesn't have much of an idea either. All it takes is a quick search of the internet to find cases where workmen invited into the home have assaulted women. You know, back in 1999, there was a case where a Sears employee who was supposed to come and clean this woman's carpets raped the woman right in her own home. There have also been cases, even here in Los Angeles, where policemen have raped women while on duty. Now, Gavin DeBecker has a fantastic list of indicators for potential problems with workmen inside the home. You know, again, this book is called The Gift of Fear, and I highly recommend it. And I've brought this book up several times in other episodes, and I have it listed on my website as one of the must-read books. You know, even if you're just curious about warning signals and get a key indicator of potential trouble, this book is a must-read. And again, it's called The Gift of Fear, by Gavin DeBecker. Now, Mr. DeBecker has two lists. He has a list of favorable behaviors, signs that this guy might be okay, and then he also has a list of unfavorable indicators, you know, signs that you should be cautious with this person. So I'll read you the lists. I'll start with the unfavorable list. So on the top of the unfavorable list, you have the person offers to help on unrelated tasks, and the person's curious or asks a lot of questions. You know, this person might stand too close. They might just walk around the house freely, like they own the place. Or, you know, the person might try to get you in a discussion on other topics or make personal comments. The worker will have no concern about time and is in no hurry to leave. The person may want to know if other people are home. And this person might want to know if others are expected to be home soon. And another indicator, and the last indicator on the list here, is that the person stares at you. So on his favorable list, he has what he has as the rule of opposites. So those were unfavorable, but the favorable ones are the exact opposite. So the person does his or her job and no more. They're respectful of privacy. They stand at an appropriate professional distance. The person waits to be escorted around the house. He keeps his comments to the job at hand. The worker is mindful of time and works quickly. And he doesn't seem to care if others are at home or not. And he doesn't care if other people are expected home. And he doesn't pay undue attention to you specifically. So that's an excellent list on things that, you know, should make you feel at ease, and then other things that should make you feel uncomfortable. So what do you want to do? You don't want to let them wander around the house. And to kind of prevent that, you want to shut doors to rooms that they don't need to be in. If the worker is, you know, replacing something in the sink, and there's a hallway, close the doors to the rooms that lead down the hallway that lead to the kitchen area where it needs to be worked on. Just don't let them see things that they don't necessarily need to see. And along those same lines, you know, you don't want to leave your valuables lying around. So you want to put your purse away, you want to put your wallet away. Anything that might be tempting, you want to keep out of sight. Also, if the guy just shows up on the doorstep and he immediately gives you the creeps, get rid of him. Kick him out. Use your instinct. If this guy doesn't feel right, just say that something else has come up and you can't do it now and you'll reschedule. You know, he's not going to be happy because he's made the drive out there and everything else. Who cares? You know, they might say, well, there's going to be a $50 fee. Pay the $50, okay? It's not worth the risk to you. I mean, if you're going to be raped, would you rather pay $50 and not get raped? Absolutely. So why would that be different from being in the future? If you think that something's wrong, pay the extra $50 or whatever the fee is and just reschedule and get somebody else. The other issue is the attacks may not happen at the time of the initial contact. Now, for example, you know, an incident happened just 2 years ago in Santa Monica. An attorney was raped in her home by a handyman that she had hired many times to come into her home and do repair work. He just crawled in through her doggy door one day and ransacked the home while she was at work. And then when she came home, he was waiting for her inside her home and attacked her and repeatedly raped her for over about 4 hours. Now, and this was a person that she had worked with and had hired in the past many times and had gained her trust. Now, a good friend of mine had a similar experience, and this was many, many years ago, but they were along the same lines. He was moving out of his mother's home, and he was packing up all of his things, including his assault rifle. Now, he had his assault rifle laying out on his bed while he was packing up, and it was in full view of some workmen that his mother had invited over, and as they walked by, they looked in the room and saw the gun. Now, these guys were there for completely unrelated business. They were there to pick up some old furniture for a national charity, and they were employed by the national charity. And I'm not going to name the institution because there's no evidence that these guys or this institution was in any way connected with the incident. But as these guys passed the door, the open door to my friend's room, they stopped and stared at the rifle, whistled, and made some comments about it. And then they went about their business and collected the furniture and left. Now, the very next day, someone, and I use someone in quotes, broke into my friend's room at his mother's house and ransacked it. I mean, they tore the place up. They tossed the bed, they cut the sheets, they did all sorts of things. And they didn't go into any other part of the home. It was just his room. Now, fortunately, they left completely empty-handed because my friend had finished moving and all of his stuff, including his rifle, were now at his new home. Now, my friend is convinced that based upon the actions and the reactions of these workmen, that they were the ones who broke into the home. And he even told the police that when they showed up. And the police actually showed up for this because there was a quote-unquote gun involved. You know, when they called in and said, yeah, these guys broke into the house, and I think they were looking for my gun. And as soon as the police heard gun, they actually sent real police officers out. But they really did almost nothing. All they did was take a report, and that was it, because there was no theft. It was just breaking and entering, and they actually didn't steal anything. Now, please don't take this story the wrong way. These types of charities do an incredible amount of good for their communities. They employ some people that are down in their luck, and they really insist, you know, assist those in need, and people that often get forgotten by most of society. The problem is that there are people out there just looking for handouts who really aren't interested in changing their ways or to get, you know, work to get out of their current predicament. And sometimes these people just use these charities for their own event. So, you know, why break into a home when a wealthy person will invite you in and look around first? And that's the way they see that some of these charities work. An opportunity to get into wealthy homes of benefactors and people that have money to give away so they have stuff to steal. It's that type of criminal attitude, the criminal mind. Stuff that, you know, normal people wouldn't think about. And I absolutely still donate to these charities and donate furniture. But what I do now is different. I don't let them workmen in my home. What I do is either I drive the donations to one of their drop-off points, or if it's too large, I move the item out of my home onto the driveway and let them pick it up from the driveway. I don't let them in the house. You know, it's the same end result, but I'm kept a little bit safer. Now, I don't bring all this stuff up to scare you into doing all the work on your home yourself. You know, the chances of being assaulted or robbed by a professional installer are really pretty slim. They're even slimmer if the workman is licensed and bonded. But I bring this up to raise my favorite word, awareness. You need to be aware of these types of incidents so that you can take preventative measures to protect yourself. You can't live your life in fear of everything, but what you can do is take steps to protect yourself so that you can rest easier knowing that you've done what you could. Switching gears a bit, I also want to talk about lights inside the home. Now, lights inside the home are visible from the outside, even with window coverings. You know, they make the home look occupied and active. And many people set their lights on timers when they leave on vacation to make it look like they're still home. And this can be a good idea as well as a bad, depending upon how they're implemented. And I can't believe I'm going to do this, but I'm going to talk about a scene in the movie Home Alone. Yeah, I know. I apologize for it. But anyway, in the beginning of the film, the burglars case the entire street by looking at homes and watching when the lights go on and off every night. And they've got them on, they're obviously on timers. By the predictable nature of the lights, they can tell which homes are empty and which are still occupied. You know, unfortunately, that's really not too much of a stretch. Something I teach in my women's survival course is that predictable schedules kill. Routines kill. If you go to bed and turn off the light at the exact same time every night, a stalker or home invader can figure this out. If you leave your home at the exact same time every single morning, or if you take the exactly the same route home at exactly the same time every day, that can be tracked. Lights and timers can do the same thing, but, you know, you can turn to some of that to your advantage. One thing to do is to run the lights on timers all year round, not just when you leave town. That way, there is home activity when the lights turn on and off automatically. It'll be harder for anyone looking on to determine, you know, whether you're gone for the weekend, out for a late dinner, sitting at home reading, or if you're off on a holiday, if the lights go on and off at the same time every single night, whether the home's occupied or not. The other thing to do is set the timers at odd intervals. Humans are naturally regimented and habitual. We also tend to think in nice, easy, round numbers. So, our instinct would be to set a light timer to trigger on one of these nice round numbers, like on the hour, or on the half hour, or, you know, in a 15-minute increment. The thing is, our actions are more random than that. Our nightly news program may end at 9:30, but that doesn't mean we jump up immediately from the couch and run over and hit the light switch as soon as the program ends. So why would we set the timer to act like that? What we want to do is want the timers to simulate our natural actions as much as possible. So what you want to do is set the timers at odd numbers. Something like, you know, if the program ends at 9:30, think about, you know, 5 minutes of sitting around, getting up, stretching, doing your thing, and then maybe going out and then coming back. So the timer might actually go off in that room at 9:36. Also, as you close down for the night, notice how much time it takes you to move from room to room and turn the lights off. Then what you want to do is you want to set your timers to mimic those time differentials. So if the entire house immediately in one fell swoop turns off at 9:30, it's a little suspicious. You know, the whole house goes dark within 5 seconds of each other. That's really pretty obvious what's going on there. But turning the lights off in rooms as you move down in an irregular sequence, looks more like someone's actually walking down the hall and turning them off by hand. Some of the new timer systems actually have these random elements built into them. They're there to simulate the normal random actions. So if you set the timer for 9:45, it will randomly trigger, you know, give or take 10 minutes, you know. So if you set it for 9:45, it may trigger at, say, 9:36 on one day, or 9:51 on the next day, 9:46 on one day, and then, you know, another 9:47. What you want to do, though, is you want to check the label of any light timer that you buy to see what this random interval is, if it's switchable, and even if it has a random interval setting. And now I'm going to talk quickly about window coverings. You know, when you choose a window covering for privacy and security, you need to make sure that the entire window is covered. Now, the covering should move all the way to the edges. It should overlap the edges of the actual glass by a fair margin. And what that'll do is it'll help prevent someone from peeking around the edges. Also, you know, whenever possible, choose material that is dense enough to prevent shadows or showing movement when backlit. You can't prevent light from showing through, but it is best if they can't tell if actually someone is in and walking around the room. What I like to do with horizontal blinds is to turn them up so that the blades are high on the inside and they slope down and away. And the reason for this is that when you're close up to horizontal blinds, you can almost always see through them because they're rarely shut tight enough to really seal. But if they're turned up on the inside, if someone's on the outside looking in, the angle of vision is forced up. So hopefully all that they can really see are the tops of shelves and the ceiling. You know, as always, this isn't a perfect solution, but it does make things just a little more difficult for the criminal, and that's what we want. Before we head into the mailbag, I also wanted to bring up about creating an inventory for your belongings. I know, it sounds like a huge pain, but it really doesn't have to be. And if you ever need it for insurance reasons, either from theft or fire or natural damage or the like, it can be invaluable. Well, at least as valuable as the insurance check that you get from your insurance company. Now, the easiest way to do this is with your home video camera. Just put a fresh tape in and walk around your home and point the camera at an item and talk about it. And whenever possible, make sure to show the make, the model, and the serial number of the item. And if the serial number is too small to really show on the screen, read it aloud. You know, insurance companies love videotape inventories because they can see the item, they can see the condition that it's in, and it's a lot harder to fake video than photographs. And when you're done, make a few copies of the tape. I mean, a couple of copies. You just don't want one copy, you want a couple of copies. And then you want to store the copies away from your home. Away. Now, you can keep one master copy for yourself and in your safe or whatever safe place you have, but you really want to have at least one copy off your home premises. So give one copy to your parents, give another to a sibling, and maybe another to your favorite cousin. You want it away from your house in the event that there's a natural disaster that levels a building, or there's a fire, or, you know, even worse, it would suck if the thief stole your insurance tape along with all your other stuff, too, and then you're really left with nothing. No, seriously, you can make the tape in less than 90 minutes. Just, you know, 90 minutes, that's almost a lunchtime. And it's really worth the time. You know, you can get anything of value from computers to televisions and the video camera itself, the furniture, anything that you can be compensated for in your insurance policy, you want to put on that videotape. Police and security folks also recommend engraving your driver's license number on anything that might go walking and end up in a pawn shop or on eBay. You know, it'll just make it that much harder for the criminal to fence it if it's marked. Also, police do check pawn shops for stolen merchandise. And please, please do not mark it with your social security number. You need to always keep that private and secure. You just want to mark it with your driver's license number. You might have noticed that I haven't really mentioned anything about getting your stuff back. Well, generally speaking, or I might say, cynically speaking, that isn't going to happen. Sure, yes, it does happen, but the chances of you getting your laptop back after someone has stolen it from your home, or your jewelry, or your expensive Nikon camera, are really pretty slim to none. You know, cars have a fairly high recovery rate, but small items, they just tend to disappear. I do know of a case where a laptop was recovered. And here's a story around that one. A guy stole a laptop from a company he was working for just before he quit. You know, he just walked it home and never returned it. You know, several months later, he held a garage sale and put this laptop out with the rest of his stuff to sell at his garage sale. A current employee of the company that he had worked for noticed that the laptop that he was selling still had the security tag and corporate inventory number attached to it. When he got back to work on Monday, he reported it to the company's security department. They called the police, and the police got a search warrant, and then they searched the guy's house and found all sorts of company gear in the guy's home, and they arrested him for theft. And the equipment was returned to the company. So yeah, it is possible to get stolen items back, but don't count on it. Okay, in summary, we have workmen in the home. You have to remember that this person is a stranger, and despite what credentials he or she carries, you don't know them, and you should not trust them entirely. And you want to keep your stuff out of sight as much as possible to prevent any sort of temptation. And, you know, lights on timers inside the home all year long can be very useful deterrents, you know, if they're used and installed properly. Window coverings should overlap the edge of the windows by a good margin to prevent people from peeking around the edges. And if you have horizontal blinds, you want to turn the blinds up on the inside. And the last thing is, you want to inventory your belongings. You want to use your video camera to create an inventory and then store at least one copy of the tape off-site with a trusted friend. Before we look at mail, I wanted to send out a thanks to all the nice folks who have posted some very kind reviews of the show in iTunes. You know, I really love hearing feedback, both the good and the bad, so please keep it up. Last week, I read part of an email from Amanda in California. And in this episode, I'll read the second part because it kind of fits in a little bit better. So she writes, "This came to me as I was going through my mail, and you may want to mention on your podcast to shred everything that has your name on them, even the ordering form on the inside of your catalogs. Most catalogs still print your name and address on the inside ordering form, usually in the middle of the thing." Now that's an excellent suggestion, Amanda, and thanks for writing it in. You really should shred anything and everything that associates your name with any sort of account number. And that's especially those pre-approved credit card letters that you get in the mail. Man, those things are a huge security risk for you. You know, my father was actually unknowingly taken in by some clever crooks with one of those pre-approved credit card things. And this is back in the 1980s. So what these guys did was they checked my dad's mail and found one of those pre-approved forms in it. Then they took the form, they completed it, and then they mailed it back in. Then they checked his mail every day until the new credit card arrived. And when it arrived, they took the credit card out. You know, and this was a credit card that was in my father's name, using his credit, and it was something that he never even knew that he had. And then these crooks, they went on a shopping spree with it. You know, they even took it to a local Indian gambling casino, and they used it to buy chips to gamble with to hopefully make even more money. You know, he didn't learn about all this stuff until he got the bill almost a month later. In the 80s, the police just chalked it up to, you know, theft by some kids, but today it would be classified as identity theft and treated far more seriously. But the moral to that story, and as Amanda points out, is to shred everything. You know, just tearing it up is pretty much worthless. The thing is, they're still in big pieces. And those big pieces are all placed into a big plastic bag. And then that big plastic bag goes on the street in front of your house where anyone walking by can just pick it up. You know, hackers call it dumpster diving. And if you aren't careful, it can turn up a lot of your personal information. So what you want to do is you want to purchase a cross-cut shredder, not just a paper slicer. Cross-cut shredders are far more secure because they chop the paper into a lot of small pieces. They just don't cut the paper into long strips, which, you know, is really easy to put together. Cross-cut shredders are definitely the way to go, and you can buy them at any office supply store. I got several emails about dogs, and they brought up some things that I failed to mention or make clear about dogs. And, you know, although not all dogs are great protectors, they all make noise and will alert you if someone's approaching your home. Now, if someone comes onto your property, even a little chihuahua will bark, letting you know that someone's there. So they can act as biological alarm systems. So thanks to everyone who wrote in. I really appreciate it, and I love hearing from you guys. Well, that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions and commentary, send an email to podcast@alexhaddix.com. That's podcast@alexhaddix.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexhaddix.com. Until next time, stay aware and stay safe. Kevin MacLeod.